Chapter 3. The presence of his daughter, as usual, calmed him much, even while, as usual too, it saddened him, for he could never forget that she had disposed of herself for life in opposition to his wishes, though as he had secretly assured him that she would never have consented had she been as old as she was now. As on a former occasion, his wife wished to speak to him alone about the girl's future, the time now drawing nigh at which Reynard was expected to come and claim her. He would have done so already, but he had been put off by the earnest request of the young woman herself, which accorded with that of her parents, on the score of her youth. Reynard had deferentially submitted to their wishes in this respect, the understanding between them having been that he would not visit her before she was 18, except by the mutual consent of all parties. But this could not go on much longer, and there was no doubt, from the tenor of his last letter, that he would soon take possession of her whether or no. To be out of the sound of this delicate discussion, Betty was accordingly sent downstairs, and they soon saw her walking away into the shrubberies, looking very pretty in her sweeping green gown, and flapping broad-brimmed hat overhung with a feather. On returning to the subject, Mrs. Dornell found her husband's reluctance to reply in the affirmative to Reynard's letter to be as great as ever. She is 3 months short of 18. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he exclaimed. 'Tis too soon. I won't hear of it. If I have to keep him off sword in hand, he shall not have her yet. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but, my dear Thomas, apostrophe, she expostulated. Consider if anything should happen to you or to me, how much better it would be that she should be settled in her home with him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I say it is too soon. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he argued, the veins of his forehead beginning to swell. If he gets her this side, oh Candlemas, I'll challenge and I'll take my oath on't. I'll be back to King's Hintock in 2 or 3 days, and I'll not lose sight of her day or night. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she feared to agitate him further, and gave way, assuring him, in obedience to his demand, that if Reynard should write again, before he got back, to fix a time for joining Betty, she would put the letter in her husband's hands, and he should do as he chose. This was all that required discussion privately, and Mrs. Dornell went to call in Betty, hoping that as he had not heard her father's loud tones. As he had certainly not done so this time. Mrs. Dornell followed the path along which as he had seen Betty wandering, but went a considerable distance without perceiving anything of her. The squire's wife then turned round to proceed to the other side of the house by a short cut across the grass, when, to her surprise and consternation, she beheld the object of her search sitting on the horizontal bough of a cedar, beside her being a young man, whose arm was round her waist. He moved a little, and she recognized him as young Phillipson. Alas, then, she was right. The so-called counterfeit love was real. What Mrs. Dornell called her husband at that moment, for his folly in originally throwing the young people together, it is not necessary to mention. She decided in a moment not to let the lovers know that as he had seen them. She accordingly retreated, reached the front of the house by another route, and called at the top of her voice from a window, Betty. Apostrophe, apostrophe, for the first time since her strategic marriage of the child, Susan Dornell doubted the wisdom of that step. Her husband had, as it were, been assisted by destiny to make his objection, originally trivial, a valid one. She saw the outlines of trouble in the future. Why had Dornell interfered? Why had he insisted upon producing his man? This, then, accounted for Betty's pleading for postponement whenever the subject of her husband's return was broached. This accounted for her attachment to Falls Park. Possibly this very meeting, that as he had witnessed, had been arranged by letter. Perhaps the girl's thoughts would never have strayed for a moment if her father had not filled her head with ideas of repugnance to her early union, on the ground that as he had been coerced into it before she knew her own mind, and she might have rushed to meet her husband with open arms on the appointed day. Betty at length appeared in the distance in answer to the call, and came up pale, but looking innocent of having seen a living soul. Mrs. Dornell groaned in spirit at such duplicity in the child of her bosom. This was the simple creature for whose development into womanhood they had all been so tenderly waiting, a forward minx, old enough not only to have a lover, but to conceal his existence as adroitly as any woman of the world. Bitterly did the squire's lady regret that Stephen Reynard had not been allowed to come to claim her at the time he first proposed. The two sat beside each other almost in silence on their journey back to King's Hintock. Such words as were spoken came mainly from Betty, and their formality indicated how much her mind and heart were occupied with other things. Mrs. Dornell was far too astute a mother to openly attack Betty on the matter. That would be only fanning flame. The indispensable course seemed to her to be that of keeping the treacherous girl under lock and key till her husband came to take her off her mother's hands. That he would disregard Dornell's opposition and come soon was her devout wish. It seemed, therefore, a fortunate coincidence that on her arrival at King's Hintock a letter from Reynard was put into Mrs. Dornell's hands. It was addressed to both her and her husband, and courteously informed them that the writer had landed at Bristol, and proposed to come on to King's Hintock in a few days, at last to meet and carry off his darling Betty, if she and her parents saw no objection. Betty had also received a letter of the same tenor. Her mother had only to look at her face to see how the girl received the information. She was as pale as a sheet. "You must do your best to welcome him this time, my dear Betty," apostrophe her mother said gently. But I apostrophe, you are a woman now, apostrophe added her mother severely, and these postponements must come to an end. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but my father, oh, I am sure he will not allow this. I am not ready. If he could only wait a year longer, if he could only wait a few months longer. Oh, I wish my dear father were here. I will send to him instantly. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she broke off abruptly, and falling upon her mother's neck, burst into tears, saying, "Oh, my mother, have mercy upon me, I do not love this man, my husband." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the agonized appeal went too straight to Mrs. Dornell's heart for her to hear it unmoved. Yet, things having come to this pass, what could she do? She was distracted, and for a moment was on Betty's side. Her original thought had been to write an affirmative reply to Reynard, allow him to come on to King's Hintock, and keep her husband in ignorance of the whole proceeding till he should arrive from Falls on some fine day after his recovery, and find everything settled, and Reynard and Betty living together in harmony. But the events of the day, and her daughter's sudden outburst of feeling, had overthrown this intention. Betty was sure to do as he had threatened, and communicate instantly with her father, possibly attempt to fly to him. Moreover, Reynard's letter was addressed to Mr. Dornell and herself conjointly, and she could not in conscience keep it from her husband. "I will send the letter on to your father instantly," apostrophe she replied soothingly. "He shall act entirely as he chooses, and you know that will not be in opposition to your wishes. He would ruin you, rather than thwart you. I only hope he may be well enough to bear the agitation of this news. Do you agree to this?" Apostrophe, poor Betty agreed, on condition that she should actually witness the dispatch of the letter. Her mother had no objection to offer to this. But as soon as the horseman had cantered down the drive toward the highway, Mrs. Dornell's sympathy with Betty's recalcitration began to die out. The girl's secret affection for young Phillipson could not possibly be condoned. Betty might communicate with him, might even try to reach him. Ruin lay that way. Stephen Reynard must be speedily installed in his proper place by Betty's side. She sat down, and penned a private letter to Reynard, which threw light upon her plan. "It is necessary that I should now tell you," apostrophe she said, "what I have never mentioned before, indeed I may have signified the contrary, that her father's objection to your joining her has not as yet been overcome. As I personally wish to delay you no longer, am indeed as anxious for your arrival as you can be yourself, Having the good of my daughter at heart, no course is left open to me, but to assist your cause without my husband's knowledge. He, I am sorry to say, is at present ill at Falls Park, but I felt it my duty to forward him your letter. He will therefore be like to reply with a peremptory command to you to go back again, for some months, whence you came, till the time he originally stipulated as expired. My advice is, if you get such a letter, to take no notice of it, but to come on hither as you had proposed, letting me know the day and hour after dark, if possible, at which we may expect you. Dear Betty is with me, and I warrant thee that she shall be in the house when you arrive. Mrs. Dornell, having sent away this epistle unsuspected of anybody, next took steps to prevent her daughter leaving the court, avoiding if possible to excite the girl's suspicions that she was under restraint. But, as if by divination, Betty had seemed to read the husband's approach in the aspect of her mother's face. He is coming. Exclaimed the maiden. Not for a week, her mother assured her. He is then for certain? Well, yes. Betty hastily retired to her room, and would not be seen. To lock her up, and hand over the key to Reynard, when he should appear in the hall, was a plan charming in its simplicity, till her mother found, on trying the door of the girl's chamber softly, that Betty had already locked, and bolted it on the inside, and had given directions, to have her meals served where she was, by leaving them on a dumbwaiter outside the door. Thereupon Mrs. Dornell noiselessly sat down in her boudoir, which, as well as her bedchamber, was a passage room to the girl's apartment, and she resolved not to vacate her post night or day till her daughter's husband should appear, to which end she to arrange to breakfast, dine, and sup on the spot. It was impossible now that Betty should escape without her knowledge, even if as he had wished, there being no other door to the chamber, except one admitting to a small inner dressing room inaccessible by any second way. But it was plain that the young girl had no thought of escape. Her ideas ran rather in the direction of entrenchment. She was prepared to stand a siege, but scorned flight. This, at any rate, rendered her secure. As to how Reynard would contrive a meeting with her coy daughter, while in such a defensive humor, that, thought her mother, must be left to his own ingenuity to discover. Betty had looked so wild and pale at the announcement of her husband's approaching visit, that Mrs. Dornell, somewhat uneasy, could not leave her to herself. She peeped through the keyhole an hour later. Betty lay on the sofa, staring listlessly at the ceiling. You are looking ill, child, cried her mother. You've not taken the air lately. Come with me for a drive. Betty made no objection. Soon they drove through the park towards the village, the daughter still in the strained, strung-up silence that had fallen upon her. They left the park, to return by another route, and on the open road past a cottage. Betty's eye fell upon the cottage window. Within it she saw a young girl about her own age, whom she knew by sight, sitting in a chair and propped by a pillow. The girl's face was covered with scales, which glistened in the sun. She was a convalescent from smallpox, a disease whose prevalence at that period was a terror of which we at present can hardly form a conception. An idea suddenly energized Betty's apathetic features. She glanced at her mother. Mrs. Dornell had been looking in the opposite direction. Betty said that she wished to go back to the cottage for a moment, to speak to a girl in whom she took an interest. Mrs. Dornell appeared suspicious, but observing that the cottage had no back door, and that Betty could not escape without being seen, she allowed the carriage to be stopped. Betty ran back, and entered the cottage, emerging again in about a minute, and resuming her seat in the carriage. As they drove on, she fixed her eyes upon her mother and said, "There, I have done it now." Her pale face was stormy, and her eyes full of waiting tears. "What have you done?" said Mrs. Dornell. "Nanny Priddle is sick of the smallpox, and I saw her at the window, and I went in and kissed her, so that I might take it, and now I shall have it, and he won't be able to come near me. Apostrophe apostrophe, wicked girl. Apostrophe apostrophe, cries her mother. Oh, what am I to do? What, bring a distemper on yourself, and usurp the sacred prerogative of God, because you can't pallet the man you've wedded? Apostrophe apostrophe, the alarmed woman gave orders to drive home as rapidly as possible, and on arriving, Betty, who was by this time also somewhat frightened at her own enormity, was put into a bath, and fumigated, and treated in every way that could be thought of to ward off the dreadful malady that in a rash moment as he had tried to acquire. There was now a double reason for isolating the rebellious daughter and wife in her own chamber, and there she accordingly remained for the rest of the day and the days that followed, till no ill results seemed likely to arise from her willfulness. Meanwhile, the first letter from Reynard, announcing to Mrs. Dornell and her husband jointly that he was coming in a few days, had sped on its way to Falls Park. It was directed under cover to Tupcombe, the confidential servant, with instructions not to put it into his master's hands till he had been refreshed by a good long sleep. Tupcombe much regretted his commission, letters sent in this way always disturbing the squire, but guessing that it would be infinitely worse in the end to withhold the news than to reveal it, he chose his time, which was early the next morning, and delivered the missive. The utmost effect that Mrs. Dornell had anticipated from the message was a peremptory order from her husband to Reynard to hold aloof a few months longer. What the squire really did was to declare that he would go himself and confront Reynard at Bristol, and have it out with him there by word of mouth. But, master, apostrophe, said Tupcombe, you can't. You cannot get out of bed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you leave the room, Tupcombe, and don't say aunt before me. Have Jerry saddled in an hour. Apostrophe, apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.